We are once again in the beautiful city of Windhoek, Namibia, and we're in fact in my hotel room. And I'm joined by, it's been a pretty quiet hotel room, it has to be said, because of the bubble. But this time around, I'm joined by pretty special company in Titans and Proteas Test Captain, Dean Elgar. How are you, Dina?
Hello, Derek. How are you?
Good, thanks. How's the trip been so far?
It's been good quite so far. A little bit frustrating that we obviously still in the hotel. Can't get out in the bubble and all that stuff. But so be it. This is what we have to do. It's the nature of the beast at the moment. But yeah, it's still good to be here. It's still good to get out and play some cricket. Excuse me. So yeah, everything is okay.
I've been in a few bubbles. I can imagine you've been in a lot more. But I think we must commend Namibia or Cricket Namibia for putting this together, because it's been pretty. It's been pretty tough to break the bubble, and we've been under strict lockdown between the hotel and the ground, and nowhere in between.
I think that's like par for the course now. If you want to tour or if you want to play cricket. I think any sport, actually, but if you want to participate in what you do and what you love, unfortunately, that's what you have to adhere to. It's a bit of a frustration, something that we're not used to, and so be it. Like I mentioned, if you want to do something that you love, you unfortunately have to live in these kind of times.
How do you handle it as a sportsman? Because, I mean, I've been watching it fairly silently from the background, and I mean, it's... Granted, it's only been a week, so you've handled it pretty well. But we saw Quinton de Kock had an issue eventually, and he took a bit of a break. Ben Stokes having the same thing. Does it eventually have a severe impact on your psyche, or are you pretty okay?
I don't know if I should actually speak my mind about that or not. But I think ultimately, like I said, if you want to do what you love, if you want to express yourself as a player, you need to adhere to these kind of rules and regulations. They're totally out of your control. You just need to man up and do what you have to do. That's a bit of a mental strain on a lot of people. I can understand and respect that. When I speak for myself, I just crack on and get through it, and so be it. It's life. I only have a few years left in my career, so I can't be the one to say I need time off because of these kind of moments in one's career, because I only have a few years left and I still want to enjoy them. But yeah, each man to their own. You got to respect that, and so be it. But yeah, I'm definitely not going to shy away from a bubble. Knowing that I can play cricket for the Titans or South Africa or whoever.
Okay, cool. And enough bubble talk. Let's talk cricket now.
Yeah, the bubble's burst.
Yeah. So we are one match away from ending the tour. We've had one 50-over clash, three T20s, one more to go. And at the moment, you guys are 2-1 down in the T20s. You won the 150-over clash. It is the pre-season tour, so a lot of experimentation going on. But have you enjoyed it so far as the results have gone?
Yeah, I think it's been quite challenging in the sense of the conditions haven't been what we're potentially looking for when it comes to a pre-season, but it's also been challenging in a good sense. You also have to adapt as a player, whether it's in-season or pre-season. You have to be able to adapt to whatever you have in front of you. So I think it's been good. It's been taking players into a different space where they've potentially never been before. Which in my opinion is a good thing, because you have to adapt as a player. You got to be versatile and you got to be a little bit diverse when it comes to those kind of things. So I think it's actually been okay.
So if you look at the mixture of the squad, of great mixture of experience and youth. So you look at the likes of Aaron Pangiso or Tienus de Bruin, some standout performances from them. The youngsters coming through as well, Akukle Kele, in the 30-20, a great performance from him, 3 sticks. So it's nice to see the old hands coming through, but also the youngsters putting their hands up too.
Yeah, I think the old people have to lead from the front. Ultimately, if you want to create a culture in whatever sporting code you are in, the senior guys have to lead from the front, which is nice to see guys like Pangi and Tierney actually put their hands up and lead. And obviously, ultimately, the younger guys will follow. I think that's obviously something that we're trying to create. we know as senior players that we have to tick those boxes. We have to put in performances. We can't just talk the talk. We got to walk the walk as well, which is something nice to have those guys around with. And they don't just say something and do nothing. They do quite a lot on the field. It's good to see a lot of people following, and it's good to see new guys putting their hands up when it comes to opportunities and chances. I think we're in a good light at the moment.
Yeah, and on that subject regarding the Titans, one of the better franchises to play for, I can imagine the world over. We always
better.
Talk about it.
Best one.
There we go. That's exactly what we wanted to hear. And the amazing thing is what Jacques Fall is doing is creating the Titans international brand, in that you do get to go to places like Namibia, the Seychelles in the past, Abu Dhabi, and the list goes on, and there's more to come. It's amazing the amount of all-stars that have played for the Titans and are playing for the Titans, and you get to lead from the front again. You lead a very experienced, a very strong outfit.
Yeah, the Titans speak for itself. The lists, I mean, if I had to rattle off names now, I don't think I'll cover the whole list. But it's a special franchise to play for, special team to have. It's immensely powerful to have that badge on your chest of the Titans logo. And I think everyone feels that. Playing for the Titans is a dream, I think, of every South African cricketer. I hope it's a dream of every South African cricketer to one day to aspire to play. It's always been like a dream of mine when I was growing up to play, and I've lived it now for nearly 7 years, and it's something that you can't get enough of. There's great background stories when it comes to the Titans, the legacy, the stories that you hear of past players, and that's just something that you want to carry forward and something that you want to pass on to other guys.
So let's go back 7 years ago. How did it come about, your move over to the Titans? A man born and bred in the Free State, over in Welkom, eventually playing and captaining the Knights, I think it was back then. And, making your move over here.
I had a few teammates that was part of the Titans, that were part of the Titans, that obviously tried to get me here earlier than actually when I came over, in Heinekoen and Ferran Bjorin. So they were very, very strong on me coming over here. And at the time of my potential, like at the time of my career, maybe I wasn't in that space to actually make that call. So they were, they were actually quite hard on me to come here. I remember one day we played a game against the Titans in Pretoria. And I was sitting in their change room and they actually put a Titan shirt over my head. And like I wore it. And I reckon it was maybe a year or two, and I was actually wearing that jersey. So there's been a lot of orchestrated manipulation, I would say, by those two to try and get me over to to Pretoria. But I think every guy has that phase in his career where you start somewhere and you hone your skills, and sometimes you have to move on. Like, I love my 8 years that I had in Bloem with the Eagles and Knights at that time. I love that time because that was my early phase, my building phase, getting to know your game phase. And then when you come to the Titans, you actually learn what it's about to play for something that's a lot bigger than you. It was a bit of a transition in careers or phases of career. But it's something that I think every player has to go through. I'll never change it for the world.
And your early phase of your career. I mean, I know we've spoken a lot about it on tour, about coming from Welkom, you're an English guy, pretty rare in itself. My old man, exactly the same situation from him. Grew up in Welkom, English. How did cricket come about for you, for Dean Elgar? And another thing we chatted about yesterday, which I didn't know about, was that you were very, very good at squash, and squash almost took your interest away from cricket.
I think growing up, I had an interest in sport in general. So anything with a bat, ball, racket, ability to run, I dabbled in everything growing up. But as you get older, you got to make things a little bit smaller and make things a little bit central, which was when you have to choose between a few sports. I'm not a big guy in stature, so rugby was out the game. So yeah, I chose obviously cricket and squash, which for me was great, because cricket being a summer sport, squash being a winter sport. But then actually squash started like dominating my life at that stage, where I played it throughout the year. Yeah, and it was great. I mean, it's kept me fit, and obviously the hand-eye coordination, you never lose that being a person that's interested in ball sports, for instance. So yeah, there's a lot of background story that I could get into, but I mean, obviously I connected with cricket and squash quite well. I had to because the demand on my body at that time was quite immense, because I was doing basically everything under the sun. But yeah, I'm very, very happy the way I've settled down into what I'm doing now. Yeah, cricket's great, but for me, squash was always my first love. Yeah, it's just unfortunately that there was no future in that. And yeah, that's just how it is when you're growing up.
Yeah, you know, I'm a massive lover of squash. I'm quite crap at it, though. I'm nowhere as good as you are. And I only found that out yesterday. I was actually going to play you on the court, and then you told me that little nugget of info, and I was like, okay, cool, damn, I've got my ankle sprain is starting to flare up again. So you went through the ranks in the cricketing stage and during your schooling career, and you were SAS schools captain, am I not mistaken?
Yeah, in 2000 and, are we going back now, 2005 I think it was.
And how did that come up? Was it a surprise? Did you expect it?
I think a boy from Free State, you don't really expect that. But I thought the phase...
Who's not from Grey Bloom.
that's also a good fact. Yeah, I was obviously not a Grey Bloom guy. Mm. And just to play for Free State, not being a Grey Bloom guy is a big thing. But obviously I had to do something right or well. Mm. I think I put on a lot of good shows and a lot of success when it comes to playing schoolboy cricket, for instance. Yeah, it's something weird. A Free State boy captaining SA schools when you're 18. I don't think that's not something people speak about every day. I'm very proud of that kind of moment as a youngster. And to be able to still carry on with that kind of stigma has been something that I'm very proud of. But yeah, it was obviously the start of a career that I never thought I would have. I thought it might be a phase. And you never know, these kind of things come and go. But to carry on for it now, nearly 15 years that I've since I captained the SS school side. It's something I'm very proud of and something I still want to work on.
And then, of course, you went through the provincial stage, but South Africa came a-calling. And I think the call-up to the Proteas came a lot later than everyone expected, because your name was always spoken about for ages, about when is Elga going to play for South Africa. Did you feel that?
I wouldn't say. No, I don't think I felt that. Mm. I think I was just keen to play. Mm. It doesn't matter where. When you're a youngster, I think that's where the young kids get it wrong now. They want to play for South Africa. Like, playing for South Africa is the mountain that you have to climb is so high, and the work that you have to put in is so tough that you actually forget the phase that you have to go through to get there. I think at that stage, I just wanted to play. Doesn't matter for who. I was still very proud of playing for the Eagles, playing for the Knights. For me, that was playing for South Africa. Mm-hmm. That was like my mountain. I think I reached my peak, actually, because I had players around me that were immensely powerful when it comes to playing cricket. Mm. The names that I could rattle off are legends of South Africa, in my opinion. So yeah, I think at that stage, that's all I was focused on. I was just focused on scoring runs for the Eagles. Focused on scoring runs for the Knights. Never really look too far. Problem is, if you look too far, you actually lose your vision of where you actually want to go to. So yeah, I never heard the media. I'm not a media listener, which is still to this day. I don't do that. Yeah, I think that's something that you can control. But all I wanted to do was just play. It doesn't matter what level.
And the call-up did come, and next thing you're playing for South Africa. Tell us about that.
Which format do you want to go into, Derek?
Let's start off. Let's do the big one, the tests.
Yeah, the test format was something that I think every cricketer has to play for. If you're not playing to play test cricket, then you must give up the game. Mm. It was so unreal, surreal, that like I was basically packing my bags, get on a flight to Australia to replace JP Duminy, who's obviously injured himself. And as it worked out, I played in my debut, and I replaced, obviously, a hero of mine in Jacques Rudolph. And I was like, this can't be. This is honestly not happening right now. Like, I can't replace Jacques. He's been so good to me in my career building up. Now I'm replacing Oak in a test side against Australia. And I was like, no chance. So it was... it happened so quickly. I reckon that whole week. I don't remember that whole week, but I remember obviously the outcome, which we beat Australia in 4 days. I don't care about my shitstorm that I had. I honestly don't play for personal stuff. So that's all I remember. We beat Australia in 4 days and we won the series. And for me, that is way greater than what I went through. I've always alluded to that. I will go through what I went through from a personal point of view. I'll go through that again many times to win a series or to win a match. I'll go through that. Appear on debut, so be it. We won. That's all I care about. I just want to win. So it was a great learning curve. From that sense, it was a bit of a wake up call to realize how big test cricket is, the step up from where I was playing in domestic to test cricket. It's a step that like you can't put into words. It's so great. You got to experience it first, then you can then you can make your own interpretation of it. But yeah, it was an unreal time of my career. I was in awe. Because I was playing with, like, legends of South African cricket. I was playing with them. They were in my change room. And I say my change room, the change room I was in. and I was playing with them, like, Jacques Cullis, Graham Smith, Dal Steyn, Morne Morkel, A.B. de Villiers, Hashim Amla, Werner Philander. And I'm like, what? This is schoolboy stuff. This is what you dream about. But to be able to rub shoulders with those guys... It was cool. It was unreal. Played in Ricky Ponting's last test as well. Mm-hmm. That's something people also don't know. It was Ricky Ponting's last test. And to see the humility that guy had in his last test when they... So let me go deeper into this.
Yeah,
so after after the game, we just dominated Australia in this game in Perth. And like, you don't dominate Australia. Like, you have to be a special side to dominate a team. And we had a fines meeting in our change room. Next thing, the door smacks open, the whole Australian squad books in. Like, and Ricky Ponting, Michael Clarke, Johnson. I mean, they're all in there, bud. Nathan Lyon, they all come in, bro. And they're like, can we join? Because they're like, in, bud. We're having a finesy. You're in. Come sit here. And Ricky Ponting stood up and he gave us a speech.
Yeah.
About the respect that he has for South Africa as a cricketing nation. I was like, what? This is all happening in my first game. It can't get better than this. It cannot get better than this. And, just the whole significance of that. Like, he cried. He cried in the fines meeting saying he's... The time that he's played against South Africa was possibly the toughest that he's ever had. I'm thinking, yeah, there's like a legend of world cricket, not Australian cricket, world cricket. And I've experienced his last test. I'm like, this is my first test. I can't get better than that.
Was the guard of honor planned, or was it a last minute thing from Graham when Ricky went out and you guys gave him a standing ovation?
Yes, office? Derek, you're asking you're asking something I can't remember, but I recall that. Oh. I recall that, but I remember I was standing like at the end of the guard of honor. I think Jacques was Callis. Sorry about the name drop. I think he was next to me, and I was like, no, man. Like, still, that's one of those moments that you don't experience ever in your career, and I was fortunate enough to experience that. I can't remember if it was planned or not. Well, let's put it this way. If it was planned, I don't know about it.
Do you... I mean, you've seen the great side of Australia, talking about that, and you've seen the fairly ugly side, and you were heavily involved with Sandpaper Gate when they came to our shores. What was that like, being in the thick of things there?
For me, that was ugly. Mm. That was ugly. I think the emotion got the better of everyone. I think we weren't playing cricket there. We were playing the people. I think we disrespected the Australians, irrespective of what they were going through. They also disrespected us. So I think in general, cricket took a knock. It was ugly to see, man. It was ugly to see, and these are guys that have played against each other a lot over the maybe a decade, played against each other a lot, that they were willing to go that far to try and win. The desperation that Australia showed to try and win, they were willing to lose their whole identity to win. So I think what they did obviously wasn't great for world cricket. Firstly, just to be serious, like what they did for world cricket wasn't good. But I think the respect factor went out the window a lot. But I think they knew we're playing against the South African side that we're not going to beat again. They beat us in the first test.
Indeed.
Very well. Yeah, very well. They beat us proper, and we came back at them harder than we could ever. But I think they knew they can't beat us again, because they threw everything they could in the second test in PE. And, but I think what happened in Cape Town for me is it was the struggle to find another win, and the respect of cricket went out the window. The fact that senior players, were willing to sacrifice a young guy, and the measures they went to try and win, that's deep. It just shows you how proud their culture is. So you got to respect their culture in that sense. But the way they went about it, it's maybe a little bit frowned upon. So, but yeah, it is what it is. There's a lot of learnings out of it. You can't keep a gun to those guys' heads anymore, because they wanted to win. Ultimately, that's their proudest moment. They want to win. Mm. That's Australian and South African's biggest trait. We want to win. Doesn't matter what measures we go to. We want to win as a sporting code. We want to try and win. So I think they threw everything out, and that was basically their loss. Their last throw of the dice, roll of the dice that they tried. And... you know, it was a bit sad to see that the way it unfolded and the way they were treated. I mean, they're not criminals. The way they were treated, getting to Joburg Airport and escorted out. I mean, the guys didn't commit a crime.
Mm.
I think that was their desperation to win. Their hunger to win was so great, because they knew they didn't have another card to play against us, because we were way better than them at that time. So, yeah, the whole thing was very sour, very bitter. But I felt for the guys. Honestly, I felt for them, the way they were treated. Steve Smith, for me, he was treated like an absolute criminal when it came to that. Like, 10 cops around him. I mean, seriously, man. all he did was maybe... He did a wrong thing to one guy, and now he's a criminal. No, the way he was treated was piss poor, in my opinion. But yeah, the whole Sandpaper Gate was tough. It was tough to watch. It was tough to see, actually, that these guys were so desperate. But it still showed that they're so proud to try and find a way to win. It was a weird phase. That week was like so weird because the cricketing sense was out the window. I mean, but the whole series was attack on person the whole time. That whole series was so special that the cricket was so good as well. People forget about that. People forgot about the cricket that we played. That cricket was hard. It was tough. So tough. One of the toughest series I've played. And everyone remembers one incident.
Mm. You mentioned one of the guys in the change room earlier who was obviously instrumental in a lot of these series. And we're speaking a couple of days after he announced his retirement from all formats of the game, Dale Steyn. I mean, what does he like to play with and also against? Because you would have had many battles against each other, but also he's a former Titan too.
Very happy to have Dale on my side when I joined the Titans. Faced him quite a bit when he played for the Titans against the Eagles back in the day. He nearly bowled my head off the one day, and he gave me some good advice in I think it was 2008.
Yeah.
He said, "You better duck this one because I'm going to put you in hospital." And I was like, okay. Right, but you know, I'm just trying to make a humble pound here. Like, just pitch it on the stumps, bud. Don't kill me. And he nearly killed me. Like, honestly, he was the most humble, calmest guy off the field. The most loving cricketer I've played with. But on the field, man, that guy had a vision and a look in his eyes that he just wanted to go out and kill people. Like, he wanted success so much that he would go through anything.
Mm.
But off the field, what a gent. Like, so calm, just goes through the motion so well. He does his own bit. It's sad to see his career falter like it did with his injuries and stuff like that. But I think he put so much demand on his body that potentially that was bound to happen. But what a legend, bro. Absolute legend.
Do you know what happened with him and I at the CSA Awards a couple of years back? So he came up on stage and he came up to win the award for best T20 bowler. And was straight after he had acted in that movie with Adam Sandler. So he gets up on stage and I say, "Hey, cool, congratulations, an amazing award, capping a great T20. He goes, "Honestly, I don't think I even played a T20, but cool." So that's the first response.
That sounds like it.
Then I said, "Okay, cool, so, hey, you're a Hollywood actor now." And he's like, "Yeah." So I said, "For those that don't know, do you want to elaborate what you did?" And he goes, now, remember, this is at the Stanton Convention Center in front of about 1,000 people. It's being broadcast live to hundreds of thousands, millions. And he goes...
Hundreds of millions?
Yeah.
And he says, in the world.
He goes, "Nothing much. I just stood there and scratched my nuts." Because that's what he did in the movie.
Yeah.
And the whole place was packed out. And that's Dale to a T.
Yeah.
And like, funny enough, like, we sit now in my hotel room because I've toured with the Proteas quite a bit. And often we'd do these interviews in my room like this. And immediately afterwards, the guys would get up and leave. And he would lie on the bed and talk about the countries he wants to go to. And he just carries on. I think the bubble also would have had a massive effect on him.
Yeah, I don't think Dale would have done well in the bubble because he's out there. He needs to get out there and see things and experience things. He's like, he's not a wild party guy at all. He's pretty chill, but he wants to get out there.
Mm.
Like, he just wants to keep himself stimulated in a sense of, like, seeing things, doing things. But, yeah, you've summed him up very well. And the thing is, like, I think his best trait is he doesn't take his achievements too hard.
Mm.
Like, I think a lot of people would be like, "Geez, you're the best bowler South Africa's ever seen." In my opinion, I think he's the best bowler the world's seen.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll never take that. He'll never appreciate or accept that. He'll be like, "Nah, man, we won games and that's how he is." He'll never ever take the fact that he's Dale Steyn, South Africa's best test bowler ever.
Mm.
He'll never take that. He's like more wants to be Dale Steyn, the tiger fisherman.
Yeah.
And that's
and he does a lot of it too.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's like it's a bit surreal, a bit sad that he doesn't appreciate or accept
acknowledge
what he's done. But also it's a great mentor to have, for instance, that you know what, there's more to life than cricket.
Yeah, and you can compartmentalize things.
Yes,
cricket this side, fishing this side, surfing there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the best in the world, I see often, actually saw 2 days ago, someone put on Twitter who they reckon is the world 11 at the moment, test 11. And they had Rohit Sharma and I forget who the other one was opening. And a million replies just saying, Olga.
Yeah, it's about time I get recognized.
have you accepted that you're one of the best? And I think if we had to put together an all-time SA 11, you and Biff would very much be in the reckoning for openers.
I think I'm in the same light as Dale. I won't accept that. I think I've been quite average, actually. Again, I'll rather sacrifice personal performance to winning. I'd rather win a game or series than have personal accolades. For me, personal accolades are not spoken of, but winning is spoken of. So, yeah, I think that's why Dale and I, just to go back to him, we always got on like a house on fire. Because we gelled. We kind of spoke the same language.
Mm.
We kind of understood each other without understanding each other. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like, I won't accept the fact that I'm like... If there was the 11 to be selected, I won't accept that. I wouldn't.
Mm. So, I mean, also what amazes me, because you spoke about squash earlier, and you've got someone like Mark Boucher, obviously he's coach of the Proteas now, and he's tread a very similar line to you, comes from a small town, East London, very, very good squash player, and developed a trait as being a very tough player in all conditions, hard to remove, and gives as good as he gets. And would you say you in the similar mould? I think if anyone talks about, I think I spoke about it the other day again on social media. I said another fighting innings from Dean Algar, water is wet, and everyone agreed because that's pretty much been your trait. It's like you knuckle down and you get the job done, or at least try to.
Well, yeah, I try to. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. Let's put it this way: if I become a Mark Boucher the way he is now, I'll accept that all day. Because he's become a better person the older he's getting. Irrespective of what crap's going on now, that's like, for me, that doesn't reflect the person he is now. But, yeah, I think myself, I'm pretty straightforward. Eh? I want to get the job done. Kind of trying to find a way to get the job done quicker, which doesn't always help. Because there's a process that you have to follow. Yeah, I hope that the older I'm getting, the better I'm getting as a person, not a cricketer. That's something I don't. Again, cricket for me is such an external. Mm. It's such an external for me. But the person that you become through what you're doing is very important. For me, that's very important. The ability to connect with different people, different cultures, different races, for me, that's a massive thing. Cricketing-wise, I think cricket will look after itself. But you have to look after the life after cricket, or the person that you're going to become after cricket, for instance. You can be very selfish either in this environment, or you can be a giver. So I always, like I talk about giver or taker, are you taking oxygen or are you giving oxygen? I'd like to think I give. When I was younger, sure, you must take. Because that's your growing phase. That's your phase that you become better. But yeah, I think now I want to give. Like I want to give so much to guys, young guys. I want to sometimes throttle guys because they're like, you're so good. I wish I had your talent. I wish I had this guy's talent, for instance. With the ability of me giving with what I've learned. Not with what I know, it's just from what I've learned. Hardness, I think hardness is a, that's it's a personal culture. That's a personal culture. You either have it or you don't. But I'd like to think it's also fair, like, tough and fair. I think there's a fine line between that as well. So I think as you get older, your hardness maybe goes away a little bit, but you become more of a fair person, a fair teammate, which is big, because you have to give back. You have to give back to the environment that's given you so much.
How does it feel knowing that? Does it still feel surreal? You are the test captain of the Proteas. And when that call came, how did that feel?
Derek, I wish I played more test games. I wish I was more in that environment to influence. I think that's why it makes me like even hungrier to go out and perform and change the environment or whatever the case. I think that's such a... Like, you speak of it when you're young.
Yeah, as
a lightie. I spoke about like this, and my dad spoke about it, and my coach spoke about it, that this is one day what you're going to do. I'm not sure, but whatever. But it's also reality that, or a vision that can become reality. But I always thought that like it will happen one day. And whether it's for a year or two or three, doesn't matter how long. It's a moment that you have to treasure so much. It's an immensely proud and special thing that can be given to you. Like I'm getting a little bit soppy now, but I mean, it's huge. People don't understand how big it is.
Do you understand it?
I don't think I do. Mm. I don't think I understand it yet. Like I'm still getting into the role, you know, but the role that I've fulfilled so far, for me, that's massive. And it's not just cricket. It's all field stuff is huge. Like, because you can influence a whole country, per se. Right? You can, by performance, you can influence a whole country. And that for me, is immensely powerful.
Oh, we've got room service here.
Yeah, room service is here.
Sorry.
What a way to come in. But yeah, it's something that as a kid you dream of that stuff, but you don't understand what it entails. You don't understand what comes with it. I think in South Africa you deal with so many other externals that that you never think of as a kid. Whether it's getting to know your teammates, different backgrounds, politics, dynamics, building a team culture, trying to get everyone on the same page. It's tough. That's not even cricket.
Mm.
And then you got to go into the cricket thing where you got to get the trust of players. Like, players need to trust you. Like, you have a vision of what you want to do one day or want to achieve one day, and now you got to get 15 guys, 16, 17 guys to buy into that. Which is already another task in its own right, but it's also a task that I'm willing to do. You don't take that role on or the job on if you're not willing to go the extra mile. And then that's not even you worrying about your own game. I don't know how Graham Smith did it for
his entire career, basically.
Like everything. He did it in all three formats. I don't know how he did that. He must have had very special people around him. That's just what I think, where he could offload work onto people like that. And he trusted the process. There's so many externals that come with a job. But I think if you're successful and you win, it's so worth it. Like, I've had a bit of success now, won one series. I don't want to win one series. Mm. I want to win all series, right? I want to beat the best. I want to beat India. I want to beat England. I want to beat... Yeah, and that's like beating England in England. Mm. I want to beat those guys. So
you want the Edge Bastion story like Biff had. You want...
You know, those kind of moments. I think that's... So I've played now for 15 years. Professional cricket. I've had Proteas for 9 years. I think my career's only starting now. That's how I see it. It's only starting now. And you want to have those moments. You want to have those special moments where, like, you go through everything, all the trials and tribulations, and you still contribute massively as a player. Like you go out and score 150 to win a test. For me, that's like, that's fairy tale stuff at the moment. But I'm just focused on winning, and then hopefully performance looks after itself.
Who was the best captain you played under?
No, Graham, by far. By far. He was... I was actually so pissed off when he retired. Because I think that's when I only really started making myself known in the Proteas side.
Cementing your place.
Yeah. So it was always a dream of mine to open the batting with him. Always. We did it once in PE. And went out like early doors. And I'm like, no, bud, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to stay here with me, you know? He was huge. But I think he was also going through a time of his life where, like, he had to make big calls. And I think he made a massive call to obviously retire at a young age, which I still felt like he had so much to give, eh? In an environment that was... It was so strong as well. Like, we were world number one at that stage. Mm. I'm like, come on, man. You're not done, bud. I'm telling you right now, you're not done.
What highlights to me how much Graham still had to give, or how early in his career he actually called it quits, because we feel like he was there forever, but that's because he started when you're so young,
yeah.
Is that him and Stephen Cook played for Cairns together, and only once Graham retired did Stephen make his test debut. And then obviously Stephen went to play for about 2 years or so. And that just goes to show that Graham still could have had plenty left in the tank.
Plenty. Mm. That's like one of my biggest disappointments in life. It's like, Jesus, okay, bud. I'm here now. And now you're ducking. Like, okay, seriously?
So next thing, you were the opener. You were South Africa's opener. Then.
No, I was. Mm. Yeah. Kind of took the mantle over from him, I guess, when it comes to opening.
Mm.
I was like, come do it with me. I was like, no, you clown. Stop it.
and the position of opener, I mean, it's probably the most thankless job in a cricketing lineup, particularly batting in South Africa.
Yeah, I think that's, I would say in the world, openers don't get enough credit. Just from how I feel, from what you do and what you get. The guys don't get enough credit. That's point blank. That's how it is. Toughest job in cricket, I think, to open the batting. You're facing the best bowlers in the team. New nut. Wicket might be green, might be cracks, might be something. But also one of the most rewarding positions that you can have. Like, you can score a gun 100 against a bowling attack that's been running at you the whole day. And that for me is massively rewarding. It's huge.
How many times have you carried your bat now? Is it four?
No, three.
Three times.
Only me and Desmond Haynes.
Yes.
Don't make a scene. But so, like, I have a thing. I want to do it again.
Yeah.
Because I want to be...
The only
like,
one.
I don't play for the accolades or credit, but that would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
If I think about it now, that would be kind of cool. But it's not something I plan for. No, I don't prepare for that. I don't prepare, I'm going to bet the whole day. No, I don't prepare for that. I prepare to win. That would be gone.
Yeah, that would
be average cool. Cricketer doing that four times in a row. It's not bad.
Toughest bowler you faced?
Johnson by far, Mitchell Johnson. Him in a test cricket capacity, definitely. He was brutal, eh? Brutal. Yeah, he was tough. Like, he like keeps you up at night, kind of tough. Yeah. Wow. Now just his like whole demeanor, but off the field,
the nicest guy.
Gent. So like, he's a gent, nice guy. It's crazy. We had so many battles on the field and stuff like that. I'm just thinking, but just bowl the ball outside off. You look good. I'm gonna leave it. Just do that. He's like, no, mate, I'm going to kill you today. I'm going to break your arm. And he told me that a lot, and he didn't do it. So I think I won the battle.
And, yeah, let's next couple of years for Dean Elgar. What does that hold? You said that you think that you've got plenty left to go. You want to solidify this position as Proteus Test captain. But at the beginning of the podcast, you said, yeah, it's getting towards the tail end of your career. But you fit. As long as the runs keep coming, you're going to stick around.
Yeah, I think the only currency that I have to look after is the runs. If I start not performing, then maybe it's time to move on. But I still have a lot to give. I have a hell of a lot to give. Whether it's the Titans, whether it's the Proteas, got a lot to give. So yeah, hopefully I'll still have a few years left. I hope so. Different calls will call for different avenues to open up, hopefully, yeah, one day.
Lovely. This has been great.
Thanks, Derek.
Shot on that.
Cheers, Derek.